Hello and welcome back to the Killer Frogs Bullpen. This is our 19th episode. Today we are going to be talking about the Texas TCU series for the weekend, and we are also a Mark Stone Haters podcast, Go Stars. Joined once again by Carson and Nate. How are you guys? Carson, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
You know, talking TCU baseball. We'll see how I am at the end. Nate, how about you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. No complaints here on my end.
Yeah, good. I do have some complaints about this team. We'll talk about it later. All right. TCU dropped the series to Texas. Won the opening game. Lost the series 2-1 on the weekend. Kind of a pro-herb season-defining weekend. Nate, give me your thoughts. Just initial takes on the weekend series.
Yeah, overall, I thought it was a better-looking TCU. Looked more polished. Pitching looked solid. I think our hitting was better on, for the most part, on the first half of the weekend. But overall, I think we're looking better, but just not enough to come away with the series win.
Yeah, I think that might be the consensus coming around. Carson, your thoughts?
So I actually, I had reasoning for what I was going to say, and now I just thought of something that kind of summarizes what this series felt like. Like this game one and two, that was kind of just Big 12 baseball being Big 12 baseball, right? There's not a lot of, I say not a lot of scoring, essentially, on both sides. It's just heavy-handed one way. Game three felt like, that felt like super regional stuff. And I think most of the reasoning why people are mad about that game is because it was so low scoring. And you don't, like, you can look at the SEC, ACC, those are the conferences. Game three is usually like 12 to 11 or 13 to 12 or something like that. I think, I don't know. I mean, one run differential, that's really, really tight baseball. The series as a whole, I'm not too disappointed about, despite losing the series and, you know, kind of solidifying TCU's inability to now go win the conference. But I do have thoughts on what happened after the series. Okay. On social media, three or four people started calling for TJ Bruce's job. TJ Bruce is the assistant coach that mainly does the hitting for this team. I don't know why we're going after his job. Okay. It's the middle of the season. If you've got thoughts about who's coaching and why, save it to the end. Especially if you care about this team and want to see them succeed. I don't get trying to create tension in the locker room like that.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I have on the weekend before we talk a little TJ Bruce talk is I felt like we were robbed of a really good series this weekend because of the wind. There's no wind.
Yeah.
In that ballpark and around Austin, I think we're looking at a really great series for both teams, especially TCU felt like they kind of got robbed a little bit with their hits. And Texas had some that were robbed by the wind too. But if there was no wind, this would have been a great weekend. I think we're talking entirely different vibes a little bit. But yeah, TJ Bruce thing was interesting. I don't really get the hate on him. I never really get the hate on anything when it comes to coaches, right? When it comes to football, it's a little bit different if your play calling isn't right. Basketball, right. I don't really get the whole hating on a coach if your team isn't performing. Like, they're not out there hitting. They're not out there shooting a ball. Like, they can only put a game plan in place and hope their players execute it, or their players either can perform whenever needed. So to call for TJ Bruce's job just didn't sit right with me, especially, like you said, during the middle of the season. TJ Bruce has proven to be an effective coach, and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So to be able to like call for his job right now just doesn't feel right. I will say, maybe if it was like one of us with actual profile pictures that were arguing with him, it's different. But arguing with a burner, it's just a bad look, though. I think
arguing with a burner is a little bit weird, but I also, I don't know. Because burners, I've seen an article on this about TCU burners. Like, they have sway in public opinion, especially like Barstool TCU. Shout out that guy. I haven't met him, but I think he does a good job. But like, I mean, you can look at some of his tweets that have the most impact, and he's getting like tens of thousands of impressions. Like there is an effect that is there. And that's why, first of all, I don't think the burner should tweet at TJ Bruce. Just don't add it. I don't really understand that.
One of
And I
them,
also,
they didn't at TJ Bruce. TJ Bruce
I
responded to
did, yeah.
someone,
I did see the
so.
one, yeah, I saw the one about that, but there were three or four others that added him and were like, hey, can we figure this out? Like, hey, what are you doing? Just like,
I think people forget at the end of the day that the coaches are also human, right? So, like, if you're gonna
yeah.
say something about them, they're gonna naturally want to respond. Nate, anything you want to add about the TJ Bruce situation on social media?
No, like y'all said, I don't get why they're coming for the man's job. I mean, look what he did last year. Look what he did at the beginning of the year. Our hitting has been tremendous despite this latter half of the season, actually middle half of the season. But like, I don't understand him continuing to like go at these guys on Twitter. You're just making it worse for yourself, and you're making yourself look like immature almost. And like, I mean, it's almost like if somebody went after Tiger saying he's terrible, Tiger's not going to go back and respond. You just got to let it go and just coach how you know how to coach, and let your actions on the field and how the players perform talk themselves. You can't just go on X and just go after people like that. And I feel
Yeah.
like he sparked it.
Okay, I have a question, and because TJ Bruce did tweet this, and it kind of made me raise some eyebrows. Is Carson and Nate, would you say TCU swings at the first pitch or lets the first pitch go more often than not?
For the majority of the lineup takes first pitch.
Okay.
There are two or three that swing first pitch almost every time.
Nate.
I would agree.
Yeah. So TJ Bruce tweeted and said that I want our guys to swing first pitch because they have a high, that high they have a higher batting average swinging at the first pitch than they do once you get behind in the count, which I agree with. That is a statistic proven. But we've heard things, and that's all I'm gonna say, is that we've heard things is that TCU has been told to be selective on their pitches. So I don't know if now it becomes a communication error where players think that they're being told to be selective, but they're not hearing it right, or if the players just are too selective and in their own heads.
Or could it be a higher power, like Sarlu's telling him?
I don't
I
know,
don't know.
because like that's interesting that he tweeted that out.
Yeah, he said he wants players to be swinging first pitch because their batting average on first pitch when you swing is a 240.
I
And
do,
whenever you get
yeah.
behind in the count, it's under a 180.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some guys that swing first pitch a lot.
Peyton Chatney.
Peyton Chatagnier, Curtis Byrne has started doing that recently.
Sam
But
Myers.
yeah,
Sam Myers is a big first pitch
Myers
swinging guy.
a little bit, yeah. Yeah, I do think that the lineup has lost a little bit of the aggression at the plate. But I mean, kind of circling back to one of our first podcasts of the year. I predicted that TCU would struggle in Big 12 play, and it just kind of happens. It kind of happens every year where TCU goes from averaging 7 to 10 runs a game to, 4 to 6 maybe.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Go ahead, Nate.
No, all I was gonna say is it seems like almost like the player's decision, in my opinion. Because what I saw in the first game, they were swinging on that first pitch, and we saw results. And then somehow in the weekend, we lost that, and look what happens. I don't know what's going on, but it's a miscommunication, and it needs to be addressed.
You kind of have to wonder how much the starting pitcher probably plays into this. 'Cause like, I mean, I'm sure you guys can attest, when you've got like a lockdown guy on the mound, like you kind of get to just bare your fangs a little bit at the plate and just kind of go attack the guy. But whenever it's a guy that you maybe don't have as much confidence in, lineup tends to get a little bit on their toes, kind of just maybe nervous. I don't know.
See, I thought the same thing, but then the Tech series, Tech starting pitchers were throwing on average 72% of their pitches were strikes. That's
Right.
what they were doing best, and we still weren't being as aggressive.
Yeah.
I just
But
don't
we
know.
also, in that Tech series, though, we also drew a lot of walks that led to
Yeah.
the runs that we scored. So it's like which way are we going now?
Yeah, I don't think they know. I don't think we know. I mean, like, we'll talk about it because we're about to dive into it. Yeah, because I do want to bring up the walks. All right, game one. Peyton Tolley, masterclass. Anyone? Just absolutely filthy. Frogs get a leadoff double off Chase Brunson, and then a double by Curtis Byrd. Hey, the offense is back. Maybe not. All right. Luke Boyer's got an RBI on the game. Boyer's also hit an opposite field home run. I don't know where this Luke Boyer's came from, but I
That
love
was
him.
sick. That was so cool.
And then in the ninth inning, Carson Bowen got a sac fly. That was the last RBI for TCU on the weekend, by the way. It was Friday night in the ninth inning. Yeah, I mean, it kind of gave me some false hope that the offense was here, right? Peyton Tolley masterclass. We talked about it. He had to be big on that Friday night, and then the offense needed to show up. And Friday night, it looked like they did.
Yeah, I mean, sad, like, so Chase Brunson and Luke Boyers combined 4 for 9. Curtis Byrne, you can throw in there. I mean, like, when the lineup has multiple guys that have multi-hit games, I mean, it just seems like everybody else starts to hit a little bit more as well. We also drew 4 walks in Friday night's game, which that definitely helps, especially when you're going up against a stud pitcher. Their Friday night starter, Duplantier. But I
Yeah.
mean, so I kind of got the feeling from this game that it's still like, while we did have 4 guys that had multi-hit games, it wasn't as efficient as the offense could be. I was left wanting more in the ninth inning.
Yeah, Nate, your big thing from game one?
No, I mean, a lot of things was drawing the walks again, and being a little more like stable with our hits. Like the doubles, they were just great hits in the gaps, and that's what impressed me the most. And I feel like we weren't trying to like force things. I feel like they were happening naturally, and I think that's what we need to start doing instead of trying to just like crank balls, just let the ball do the work. And I feel like I just feel like what we did was completely different what we've done all season, at least for this past few months. And I feel like going forward, they need to figure out what they did, swinging on the first pitch, whatever, and get back to where they need to be.
Yeah, I think a big thing that was difference between this the Friday night game and the rest of the game is TCU only had one inning where they went 3 up, 3 down, which has been a big thing where they're going too quick through the inning. And they only had one inning, and that was in the third inning where they went 3 up, 3 down. At least another inning, they worked a walk, they got a single. No one else came around to score, but you were at least making pitchers work and seeing counts deeper. And you know, we've talked about it is. And I think we're gonna keep talking about it. Is TCU's running this fine line right now where half the team wants to work a count deep and fight back, and the other team is jumping on the first pitch. And I don't know. I think, but Friday night was great. I mean, the team looked good. I was happy.
I mean, I had aspirations of a sweep after that game. I was like, holy, we only used 2 of our better pitchers for 1 inning each, and you got 7 innings out of Peyton Tolley shut out.
Yeah.
Like, I felt really good going into game 2 and 3, but I mean, I don't know. I think it was a momentum thing the rest of the weekend. I really do. I think TCU just couldn't get it back.
Yeah. I will say it was good to see Hunter Hodges be the first option out the pen on Friday
It
night.
was. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really good seeing that the confidence is kind of back in him after his injury. Because he's going to be a vital piece, right? You lost Kyle Ayers. You kind of need that piece there in the lineup or in the bullpen. And he was good. Chase Brunson, I'm sorry, but what this dude is doing in the leadoff spot as a true freshman keeps getting overstated. Just starts the game off with a double, sets the tone, and then comes around and scores. Like, Forget this season. I'm already interested in next season with this freshman class that we have, right? All right. Go ahead, Carson.
Oh my God, voice crack. Well, I was kind of skipping over to Saturday's game, or sorry, Sunday's game. Even in the Sunday game, he's got two walks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's still getting on base.
Yeah. I do want to touch on Peyton Tolley's start a little bit. Two walks. Texas takes the count deep. They work a lot of walks, so I was okay with that. Seven strikeouts, so wasn't overpowering the hitters like you typically see him doing, but he still got the job done, right?
A lot more fly balls.
Yeah.
That's what I noticed.
Yeah.
He was more efficient.
Yeah.
He had help from his defense. Peyton Chatagnier, how you doing? Third base looks good on you, man.
Gosh.
Yeah.
He's nasty with it.
That was so disgusting.
That double play in the eighth inning.
Dude.
Disgusting. He's got an arm. Really good at third. Yeah, he looks really good at third. I think that was a great move by Sarlos to be able to make that move.
Absolutely.
All right, game two. Frogs get blanked. Their first shutout, the first time they've been shut out all season, right? They lost 7-0. Luis Rodriguez, not a bad start on the day. Didn't really, 1.2 innings pitched, 5 earned runs, 2 walks, 1 strikeout, but like wasn't giving up too bad a contact. Like it was just anything that could go Texas's way Saturday went Texas's way. You're talking about, was it Red Robinson overslides second base on a steal because the field's red? See the most miraculous catch in left field that happens because of the wind that knocks that down, which would have been a home run. It was just not TCU's day. There was a ground ball that hit first base and bounces over Carson Bowen's head. How often do you see that? Like, when that it happened, right? You saw the bullpen come in and look really good. Kademan Parker, 1.1 innings pitched, no earned runs. Andrew Mosiello, 2.2 innings pitched, 2 strikeouts, 3 walks, no runs. Storm Hierholzer got an out, and Braden Sloan came in and even looked good. Carson?
Braden Sloan.
Yeah, I was going to point it to you. Carson, Braden Sloan came in. had you turned off the game at this point, or were you still watching?
So, okay. I turned it off because it was in the weather delay, and I only got to see like the last 1.1 innings because I never got a notification that it was back. So I missed, unfortunately, Cademan Parker and Mosiello, I believe. Have a day, Andrew Mosiello.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 walks, but I mean, in 2 2/3, hey, we'll take it, especially if you're putting up zeros.
Yeah. Nate, Frogs get shut up, but they only struck out 5 times. Was at any point you felt like the lineup wasn't being productive, or do you think it was just they just couldn't buy a hit that day?
I think it was a mixture of both. There was times we're getting base, like we're getting on base, and we're not driving them home. And I feel like the wind had a lot to do with this the whole weekend. And we were just hitting it right to him, and it was pushing it back in. But this game very well could have been a very close matchup game. I think we got down early, and we just couldn't buy a hit to save our lives. But I feel like it wasn't as disappointing to me as what the score seemed, because I feel like the team played well. Our bullpen came in and shut them down, and I feel like it was just a good sight for us.
Yeah.
So I just counted the amount of fly balls that we had. So we had 12 fly balls. That's not abhorrent. Like that's not the worst that I've ever seen. Okay. The problem here is that your 2, 3, and 4 are going 0 for 10 on the day. That, I mean, even in a bad stretch, that can't happen, especially for 3 and 4. Logan Maxwell, Curtis Burnt, 0 for 4 both times.
I will say we finally did see the same lineup all 3 games for the first time all season, which is good to see. We did talk about that we'd like to see a lineup at least kind of become, you know, it didn't give results that you wanted to see, but it was at least, it was trying something new. Like, you're seeing the same lineup all 3 games in the same order. I like to see that. I do kind of question the Carson Bowen and the 2-hole.
I mean, I mean, again, this is why we don't make the lineup. But I mean, I just find that 12 fly balls, where the majority of those fly balls are coming from your supposed best hitters, that's a red flag. I feel like there's something mechanically wrong, and I feel like it's not being noticed. And I'll keep saying that until Anthony Silva goes 3-for-4 with 2 home runs. Because we know that Anthony Silva is still here.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of who is going to, I guess, bring him back out. I mean, do some soul searching. Do some soul searching if you have to.
Yeah. Nate, anything you want to touch on at this game too?
No, I just wish we'd change up the lineup to a way where our I want those same guys out there, but I really don't see why Carson Bowen's in the two hole. I would rather see somebody like, heck, Anthony Silva. Let's see if he can switch it up and get up there and get something going, because he's got a better chance at least drawing a walk. Because I feel like we're getting down, getting that out, and Chase Brunson's getting on, but then that's one out. It's hard to get in after that, especially just in a position we put ourselves in.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk game three. Game three. Mason Bixby's on the mound. He gets to start in what is potentially the biggest game of the season. We talked biggest series, but this is the biggest game of the season. You got a rubber match in Texas. You need to win this one. Mason Bixby's on the mound. He's overpowering guys with his fastball, but he just doesn't have the control. Comes out after 1.1 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. Cole Kleiker comes in, by the way, 3.1 innings, a shutdown ball. Give up 4 hits. Zachary Coyer. Nate, I might ask you a question at the end of this. Zachary Coyer, 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. Ben Abelt came in, 1.1 innings, 2 walks, 1 strikeout, 1 hit. Offense just didn't get it going, right? TCU scored in the second inning in a Sam Myers wild pitch from LBJ. And other than that, doesn't happen. Talk about a nightmare seventh inning. Frogs have the bases loaded, 2 outs. You got your guy up that you won in the batter's box in Logan Maxwell, and he flies out on a first pitch.
It was a good hit. It was a good hit.
Yeah. It was.
That, I mean, Blue made a great snag.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really know where to go in this direction for this game three. Only run since Friday came off of a wild pitch. Offense just wasn't there, and you were facing a struggling pitcher in LBJ. And, I mean, the walks were there, right? They had 6 walks on the day. 6 walks, 8 strikeouts, 8 runners left on base in the game, 3 hits. Like,
I will say, this isn't
pretty.
This is the LeBaron Johnson that I, like, expected to see at the beginning of the season. Like, that was who I – like this is the average start for him from last year. Give up 1 or 2 runs, K, 7, 8 guys, and just work your off speeds to where you can get guys to roll over or fly out. So, again, I'm going to look at the top 5 batters. So, 1-for-14 through the first 5 batters. That's rough. That's not, I mean, there's not much to talk about. I mean, the offense is struggling. It's shown signs of life again for, you know, the second straight week, but I don't know. Give me y'all's thoughts.
Nate, go ahead. I'm doing some math real quick.
I mean,
oh no, he's got another statistic.
I mean, I do.
Carson, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, our offense is struggling, and I mean, until we get to a point where we can get past that, we're not gonna have anything we can do. I mean, I feel like Bixby pitched really well to start it out, but I think he just lost his control. And I feel like if he can just give us 2 innings, it's something, because then Klecker can come in and at least go 5. So it's just.
So you've seen. So now you've seen two straight appearances from Klecker where he's done fairly well. Is there an argument for for Klecker going back into that Sunday starter role since it seems like he's found his rhythm?
To
JD,
be honest,
did I steal one of your questions?
No.
Okay.
I don't know how to word what I want to word when I respond to that.
Okay.
Because I think it depends if you punt this season.
Yeah.
If you punt the rest of the season, no. You let Mason Bixby develop in that Sunday role. Because okay. You want him to be a starter next season.
Yeah.
And if I think this Friday, Saturday games are big. Go ahead, Nate.
Well, yeah. No, I was just going to say, if it was me, if I'm coaching this team, I'm letting Bixby stay in that Sunday role, moving Klecker back to Saturday, and letting Louis come and finish out what Bixby can't. Because I feel like Louis gets ahead of himself, and they figure him out too quickly. But Louis's a great relief pitcher, and I think that's where he's more suited.
Yeah, I think Louis, we've seen two bad starts from him now. That I'd throw Klecker back in that Saturday role. I think it's a good option. I'd like to see Bixby still remain getting developed, right? I just think it's a good spot for him.
Louis is such an interesting pitcher. Is it Louis or is it Lewis?
Lewis.
Okay, I was gonna say I've heard Lewis a lot, so I'm gonna go with that. He's been really good outside of one inning for every game. I mean, especially versus Tech. He gives up two runs in the second inning, then he throws three and a third straight, scoreless. Just looks automatic. And so it seems like with him, if you get out of that big inning with only one or two runs, you can extend him quite a bit more.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues. And I'm gonna put pitching at the bottom of our issues right now, right? With this roster.
Well, yeah.
especially starting pitching. But Carson, it's time to play a game.
Oh, yay. Oh, I can't wait.
Okay. Logan Maxwell, 333 right. Batting average on the season.
Yeah, doing great.
Yeah. Would you say since April, the start of April, his batting average has been higher or lower than 220?
Lower.
Nate?
I'll say lower.
Hey, both of you are right. It's lower. Do either of you want to take a guess on what his batting average has been since April 2nd when they had their first game?
186.
It's lower than both of that. It's 160.
Oh, no.
That is not the lowest batting average since April.
Well, yeah.
Would anyone like to take a guess on the lowest batting average on the team since April?
Anthony Silva.
Ryder Robinson.
It's Anthony Silva. Let's take a guess on what do you think his batting average has been since April?
135.
Silva's?
Yeah. They gave me a 135.
Wait, what?
Nate gave me a 135. What's your guess on his
Nate
batting
gave
average
me a
135? Since April?
I'm gonna say like 90.
Close. It's actually 108.
Oh my gosh.
Since April, Anthony Silva's hitting 108.
That's horrible.
Didn't get a hit this weekend. Carson Bowen also didn't get a hit. They are the only two players on the starting nine that did not get it, that didn't record a hit in any of the three games.
See, like this entire season is so weird to me. Like I don't get it. Because I mean, like I've said before, college baseball, you don't see declines like this, really. I mean, it's usually you either stay at the same level or you go up.
No.
So I'm not sure what's going on.
I don't either. And like it's so frustrating with Silva is because he looks comfortable, he looks healthy, he's playing great defense. And then there's times where he absolutely rips the ball, like he did on, I believe it was Sunday, where he rips the ball to center field.
I will
in the
say
ninth the inning. And he looks good, but he just can't buy a hit. And then sometimes it looks like he rolls over on a fastball down the middle. It's about belt high. And I get so confused because he has an at bat where I'm like, he's so close to putting it together. Like he's about to put it together. And then he has another at bat. And I'm like, where did that last Anthony Silva go?
I mean, that's just kind of the story of this entire team, it seems like, when they start to look like the team from the beginning of the season, then they just get comfortable and, I guess, get laid back. I don't know.
Yeah, that beginning of the season confuses him so much now that I look back on it. Like, I truly have no explanation for that 13 game. And I actually have a question about that that I already have written that I'm going to save for our end of season recap.
Perfect.
And I think it'll be quite the conversation starting. Nate, I don't want to talk about these games anymore. Let's talk to some questions, all right? I'm going to go
All
with
right, let's
you
do it.
for the first one. As our group optimist, I will say, is the season over? Is it like hopes of winning the Big 12 pretty much over? Is the season over?
No, it's not over. I mean, we're still not too far back from 10th place. And I mean, as numbers say, we're pretty far back, but
It was just you
we
saying we're
still
not
got
far back
series.
from 10th place kind of threw me off. I'm not used to hearing that.
I mean, it's not over. I mean, I saw improvement this weekend, subtle improvement, but it's gonna take getting a fully healthy Logan Maxwell. I really think that's what's hindering his hitting because he's not following through with his hits very much either. It's taken away a lot of his power that he had, and he still get hitting the ball hard. I mean, he's hitting it right up the middle, but he's just not buying a hit. But we're gonna desperately need Anthony Silva to wake up, because there's really no part in this lineup right now that he's helping us out. But we need him defensively. So you taking him out, I don't know what you do in that situation, but I feel like he's gonna have to wake up first. And then Carson Bowen, defensively, great player, but even defensively, he seems off. I mean, he's throwing it to the left side of the bag half the time. So I need this whole team to wake up before it's, I'm gonna say we're good to go, but I feel like we're still in a driver's position to get 10th place. It's gonna be this team's destiny, whether they want it or not.
Yeah. Carson, after this weekend, are we closer to being done with the season or closer to being back than we were going into the weekend?
Based on feeling, closer to being back. Based on results of the weekend, further away. Because, I mean, you shut out Texas Friday night, right? You save pitching. You save quite a bit of pitching. And you drop both games. I will say there's an asterisk on the Saturday game because weather delays can affect, both teams. It's just a matter of who kind of comes out swinging first on those days. And Texas obviously got the jump on Lewis, so they end up walking away with that one. But yeah, Sunday's game kind of felt must win. It did. And a lot of people are going to be like, well, that was a terrible game. It only ended 2-1. No, that's how, I mean, that's how good pitching teams go up against each other. I mean, that's how Texas hitting was struggling going into this weekend. TCU pitching was finally starting to figure out its groove. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, like my personal opinion, I think we're closer to being back, but I think it's too late.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it is we all talked about it, right? We have our group chat. We were texting about it this weekend that even when the offense wasn't producing, like the at-bats were better. They looked better. They looked more comfortable in the batter's box. And we just didn't see results happen, which is cool. Like that's baseball. That's going to happen. But you're, and I feel better about, especially this weekend, and especially about playing DBU at home tomorrow. But it just might be a little too much too late. And that's what worries me, right? But I'm actually going to skip a question because I'm going to go to this because I think it leads perfectly into the next one is we're talking about it being too late. The formula is there, right? You got the starting pitcher that could carry you. You got the lineup that historically has produced and has the talent. And the parallel to last season is there. Last season, TCU didn't turn it around until they dropped the series to Texas and then beat DBU at home. And that is what's happening this week. So is this the absolute deadline, Carson, that TCU can turn this season around?
I'm a firm believer in superstition, so yeah, it
Okay.
absolutely is.
Nate?
I'm gonna be undecided on this one. I'm not gonna put anything.
Look at the cop out. Look at the cop out.
I'm copping out of this question.
Yeah. I don't want to say yes because I don't believe this year's team is close to anything with last year's team. Their parallels are a little bit too different with how their roster is constructed. Last year, there was a lot of questions about your pitching going into postseason play potentially. You knew the lineup would produce, and this year it's the complete opposite. But I guess technically, I'd rather have pitching locked down than hitting.
I mean, you have good pitching, you at least give yourself a chance.
That Friday night proved that.
Right. I mean,
I'm just gonna go ahead and say it.
Yeah, there he is.
I want him more. Every TCU team that has had hitting has made it far. Every team that TCU has had that's pitching wise has been kind of shut down. And I feel like the way the Big 12 is structured, you have to score a lot to make it. You on the vine if you don't have hitting. So that's just my take on it.
Now, I will say, TCU makes it to the Big 12 tournament. They're a team that's structured to do well at Globe Life. They don't have the power, but they got the guys that can hit the singles and the gaps. And they're structured to do well in that field. They've already played at that field. They gave some heart attacks there, but they went 3-0. That was back when they were on their 13-0 streak. All right, and then now let's circle back to the TJ Bruce question slightly. TCU was 3-for-20 on the weekend with runners in scoring position, batting 150 if a runner was in scoring position. Is this a coaching issue, the approach at the plate with runners in scoring position? Because they've been abysmal all season. Or is it the players just aren't performing and getting the results in the battery box? Carson, let's go to you first.
I mean, I think it's both. I think it falls on the coaching staff, not just TJ Bruce, to kind of address, you know, outliers like that. Because 3-for-20, that's not going to win you many baseball games, obviously. But that has kind of been an issue all year. I mean, even in the 13-0 streak, I mean, I can think of multiple scenarios against FGCU where we get two runners on, no outs, and we don't get one run out of it. So, I mean, I think it falls on both the players and the coaches for this question.
Yeah. Nate, nice cop-out answer, by the way, Carson. I'm just kidding. Nate, is this a coaching issue or a player's not performing issue?
I'm going to say it's a coaching issue because towards the beginning of the year, players were hitting just fine. So, you know, they got it in them. I think it's just a little bit of ill coaching and just not being prepared or not hyping up the team. I mean, they should have carried that energy that Hunter Hodges had at the end of the game towards the rest of the weekend. I love that energy. And I feel like this coaching staff's not getting us hyped up enough. And I feel like until we do so, we're not going to be in a place where we can win games.
Yeah.
I mean,
again, I'm always going to lean player side, right? And that's because the coaches could tell you, hey, this guy's going to throw a fastball belt high away whenever he's in a 1-1 count. But it's up to the players to deliver that at bat. You can only put the tools to use so many times before you actually have to practice it. And I don't know. I just think it's a trend we've seen all season. That's what makes you think it's not a coaching issue or what they're talking about behind closed doors. I just think it's a little too much of trying to do too much with one pitch.
So I want to go back to, I do agree that it seems like players are pressing at times. But I do want to touch on what Nate said, because last year about, it was, so he mentioned it just in an interview after the Big 12 championship, that when TCU was struggling before going into tournament play, he didn't address the team. He didn't do anything special, like get a team meeting together. He didn't do anything crazy. He said, no, I'm going to let these guys figure it out, because he knew that they could do it. And that's what they did. I agree that there's a certain amount of like energy that you do need to have. So maybe this isn't the same team as last year, where you maybe need to have a team meeting where you're just addressing everything that's going on. I mean, if you didn't do it last year and it worked, but five or six guys out of your starting lineup leave, I mean, maybe it's time to change things up.
Yeah. I don't really know what more you can change up right now, right?
I mean, I'm not saying like change the lineup or fielding or anything like
hey,
that.
Hey, we're getting new jerseys. We're getting no practice jerseys, but we're getting new jerseys.
I'm just saying get the team together and just have a long talk.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know, it's just given the veteran presence that's in that locker room, you would think a player's only meeting might have already happened by now. Or you'd at least hope that one has.
I'm sure that there has been. I would expect there's been multiple.
I don't know. I just all right, last question, and then we'll go to some around the Big 12 because this has been going on for a while. How big is the DBU game tomorrow, Nate? You got DBU coming to town, your crosstown rivals, who was a top 25 ranked team, but it's kind of fallen off the path a little bit. You've already beat them once at their place. How big is this game after losing a series to Texas?
It's huge. I think it would just kind of limit Texas games, to be honest, when it comes to, let's say we even make some noise in the Big 12 and we want to do something farther past that. You never know. I mean, anything. And I think beating them twice would help our scenario a lot. And so I'm throwing out a pitcher like Luis Rodriguez in this situation. Maybe give him a weekday. I mean, he did good again to do the same thing. I know it's short rest, but he only pitched a little over an inning. So I either say him or go to, we'll see.
Braden Sloan tomorrow? Anyone? Anyone?
No.
Carson, how big is the game tomorrow?
It's going to be Hampton, by the way. Like, that's that's who's going to pitch.
Hey, and it's TBA, and we're going to like
have,
that.
We're just going to have to deal with it. I mean, like I already said, yeah, I think this is the deadline. If you, not just from a feeling about the team wise, but RPI wise, DBU just dropped out of the top 25. They're currently third in line out of the top 25. So number 28, I guess. You beat DBU, you sweep them on the year. I mean, that's impressive. DBU was ranked as high as number 8 in the past weeks. That's sweeping that team is impressive. Doesn't matter who's on the mound, because DBU is a hitting team.
Yeah. I think tomorrow is just a really important game, just because, like we already talked about, RPI reasons. If you're going to be a bubble team, which TCU is aiming to be at this point, you need those big RPI wins, and your non-conference isn't really doing you much help because the Pac-12 has kind of eaten itself, unless it's Oregon State. And you kind of need that standalone, a season sweep over DBU would be huge.
You can also look at, you don't have another midweek game besides Baylor, but that's Big 12.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of room. Like, say you drop one of the series to Kansas State or Baylor, then you have to play West Virginia at the end of the year. Like, even if we wanted to pad RPI a little bit, you can't do it in the midweek anymore.
Hey, speaking of, is Oklahoma, I don't think the game against Baylor's, it goes towards your conference standings.
You don't think it does?
Does it not?
Because Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are both of their records add up to 18, and they've played a midweek game, which means their midweek or their Big 12 record should add up to 19. So
maybe not then. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like that wouldn't make sense.
I mean, if you're Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, I can understand playing it. It's the last year that you're in the same conference. For other teams, right, I wouldn't understand why you'd play a conference team midweek then, if it's not going towards your Big 12 record. I don't know. Well, I'm going to look into that, and then when we meet again this week, we'll discuss that, because that is something that will be vital for TCU going forward. All right, little bit of a DBU preview. I don't really want to deep dive into it. We've already dove into them once this season. We're just playing him again at home. We've talked about Ben Hampton being on the mound. Nate, let me ask you. We've already talked about how big of a game it is. Do you want to see the exact same lineup, albeit maybe a few players switched around where they are? But do you want the same exact lineup from this weekend?
100%. I think it'll only give them a confidence booster, especially if they can do what they did a couple weeks ago and at least get a few hits here and there. I would change up a few things. Like, I'd give Anthony Silva a rest. This would be the game to do so, especially while he's not hitting, and put, I don't know, Fisher Ingersoll or Sauce out there.
You can go Micah.
I just don't like Micah's hitting style. But
well, do you like Anthony Silva's hitting style more right now?
No, it's strikeout after strikeout.
Carson, question to you.
I'm sorry, repeat it. I was looking at stats. I'm sorry.
Do you want to see the same lineup as we saw all weekend? Maybe a few players switched around going into the DBU game? Or are you just saying, screw it, it's a rest day, normally treated as such?
No, you can't. I mean, you can't treat it as a rest day. You can't. Like, this is an RPI win.
But maybe some fresh bats doesn't hurt.
Like, so if we had seen other guys this weekend that maybe showed out, I'd be open to it. But I feel like if you've already stuck the lineup where it is for three straight games, I feel like you can't switch it up. I mean, DBU has four guys right now that are hitting over 300. But I want to circle Tom Poole, number five hitter in their lineup. Going into this game, he's 4-for-7. I mean, that's against a decent pitching squad too at LA Tech.
Yeah.
That guy scares me right now.
Yeah. And then not to forget that they have arguably one of the best catchers in the country, Grant Jay.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you have to throw the entire house at this team.
And I expect them to.
You are going to have to.
I expect them to. I expect we'll see Ben Hampton for about three. See if he gets out of three and push him four. And then after that, you'll see Braden Sloan for two innings and then Cademan Parker for an inning or two.
The only change I would probably make is maybe give Carson Bowen a rest. But, I mean, I guess it'd have to be Fisher.
I'm saying, screw it. Give me Chase Brunson in the two-hole. Give me Peyton Schatt right back at the leadoff. You know what Chase Brunson could do at the plate. You know he produces. Give me Peyton Chatagnier at the one hole. We don't have a two hole. Two holes never worked at any point in this season. So let's slide Chase Brunson down. See if it's just the curse of the two hole. Give me Peyton Chatagnier leading off again. That's where he did his best work at all this season, was leading off. Like, it's proven that he's a leadoff hitter. Give me Silva in the nine hole. Let me have Peyton Chatagnier on deck for him whenever he's at the plate. Maybe that boosts him up a little bit.
Yeah.
Have Carson Bowen in front of him. They're buddies. You know, get him comfortable. Try something. All right. Big 12 talk.
Anything.
Big 12 talk. Let's move on. Big 12 talk. I don't understand this conference. I don't get it. But we have some weekend results we need to talk about. Oklahoma is currently your conference leader at 14-4, a full three games ahead of Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and Texas, who are all 11-7. The results on the weekend: Oklahoma swept BYU. Cincy took 2 out of 3 from Houston. Kansas took 2 out of 3 from Baylor. Texas Tech swept West Virginia, by the way. And Kansas State took 2 out of 3 from Oklahoma State. Nate, which one of those series shocks you the most?
Texas Tech. They needed that, especially after dropping the series to us. Talked me the most because I really thought they were going to be in the losing position after coming off a loss with us, but they bounced right back. So that was the one that shocked me the most.
Yeah. Tech at home is a different animal. Carson, are you in the same boat?
Yeah. I mean, that's extremely impressive. For a team that did not look good, when they played us, I mean, that's, especially 15-2 against the West Virginia offense. I mean, the entire the entire weekend, man. West Virginia only 7 runs on the weekend. That's wow. That's uncharacteristic of them. Yeah, it seems like Tech is definitely on the rise, for sure.
K-State, 2-3 from Oklahoma State. That was a Kansas State going into the weekend that was looking to cement a little bit of a identity. And it seems like they did against Oklahoma State, who had been red hot. That's a big win for them.
David Bishop,
yep. Hey.
What a guy.
I wonder if he'd be leading the team in batting average right now. Anyways.
Don't make me think about that.
Yep, you're welcome, Carson. I saw that look on your face.
Don't make me do that.
All right. Anything else you guys want to add before we close this thing out?
With that weekend, Tech moved to number one in the batting statistics for the Big 12. So,
unless they're playing TCU.
Unless they're playing TCU, yeah. We're just – that's because we're better.
Yeah. Well, some – you know what? I plead the fifth on any more comment on that. All right, that'll do it for this episode. We will be back Wednesday or Thursday to do a weekend preview. And hopefully – we're coming off a win Tuesday night against DBU. But thank you guys for listening. And as always, we'll see you next time.